Now, Collins Kilburn was here by 1964, I know. Mm-hmm. And when Collins came, according to Collins' own story, you were very instrumental in getting Collins out of the pulpit and onto the streets.
I think he
did. You confess to that?
Well, I'd love to take credit for it, but I think he gives me more credit than I deserve.
Well, I would love to hear your comments about that transition, because to be in the church talking about evolution is one thing, but to be on the streets saying mm-hmm. that we need to be doing something outside of the church building is a little something different. Mm-hmm. And what I want you to do is to confess to your part in that.
Well, it was the church that I think got me on the streets.
Mm-hmm. And was it the race issue? Is that what it was?
Mostly the race issue, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was something you and Carolyn felt equally strongly about.
Yeah, and Harlan Brown, mm-hmm. and let's see who else. Of course, the Eccles and Dick and Frieda King. Mm-hmm. They were pillars of the church.
Sure.
When Collins came, my friend Herb Eldridge and I used to laugh about this. He had been in seminary and was greatly influenced by Niebuhr. Not personally, but just right. Niebuhr's teachings. And he was what I guess you'd call neo-Orthodox. And Herb and I laughed and he said, "Collins is going to preach till he drives us right out of the church." Because He was much more interested in theology than right. he was in social concerns.
Right. And of course, when he preached here back in October, he joked about his inability to generate as much interest in others for his his theology.
But we became good friends.
Sure.
And have continued to be good friends. But I think he gives me more credit for getting him in the streets than I deserve. But it is true that from our church there were a lot of activists.
Sure.
And I think a lot of that came out of the Institute of Religion, because even though that didn't get you in the streets, it got you concerned about things that would take you to the streets.
Well, one thing the Institute did, I mean, when it got into the race issue, you started drawing a biracial audience.
Yes.
And that in itself was revolutionary.
It was. It was. You're right. And it to have these folks having dinner together and then going to classes together and then going to the main event. Mm-hmm. And there weren't a whole lot of black speakers, but I think there were five or six. And
that just wasn't done.
And no, and it was, I think, a wonderful thing for the community. I think it's one of the things that kept Raleigh from avoiding some of the violence that occurred in some other cities. Because there had been, not for a whole lot of people, but for some people, there had been this experience of being together mm-hmm. and getting to know each other. And of course, when Collins was here, was right in the middle of the civil rights movement, and he got thoroughly involved in the civil rights movement.
But the United Church had played a role even before then. I remember in our archive, we've got accounts of the interracial vacation Bible school
that was
Gay Noyce and Howard Cunningham worked on together, and I believe that was 1955.
I think you're right.
Quite early.
And Carolyn and Marge Eccles, Judy Smallwood were all, and lots of others were all involved in that, mm-hmm. and of course, in that way, they became acquainted and friends of the black women.
Sure. So by the time the civil rights very active period of the 60s came along, there were a lot of people in the United Church that were old hands
that
working
experience.
In multiracial environments.
Yeah, that was a wonderful thing. And I think that was Gay Norris's idea. Mm-hmm. That Gay was he was one of those unusual people who was good at whatever a preacher has to do. Mm-hmm. He was a good preacher, but he was a good administrator, and he was a good at getting people involved. He had a term, he said, "This is an opportunity for you to serve." We used to laugh, "Watch out when he's giving you an opportunity."
He never gave you a job, he gave you an opportunity.
But he really was splendid. He just was super. But there were some, it was Art Eccles and Chuck Smallwood and Dick King and Quentin Lindsay. There was just a core of these guys and their wives that were kind of the basis for what the church did. They were just really special.
Now, Lillian Vaughn was sort of an outstanding example of that, wasn't
it? Yes, and of course he was older than, they were the mm-hmm. next generation
right.
to come along, but he and Joe Clark were, and...
Now, Vaughn was an engineer, and Clark was...
English.
English.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Just a little bit later was Ben Carter, and he was a power in the church, really, and our mother, too, they were... Wonderful is somebody said Ben Carter was in worked for, he was a General Electric distributorship, I think. Anyhow, he had lots of business experience, and he sort of kept the church solvent.
And his wife was, what was her name?
Rosemary.
That was Rosemary. And she was very involved, I believe, in the kitchen with the Institute.
Yeah, the Institute,
the church,
yes.
Uh-huh. Right. And they're Mary Pruneau's parents.
Right.
Yeah.
And Mary, of course, was a beautiful teenage and college mm-hmm. girl, and of course still very pretty, but she was a beauty. And one of the few people, the only person I can think of that grew up in the church who stayed in the church. But she's certainly been a great strength for us.
What are your memories of Susie Allen? How much did you overlap with her?
Well, Susie Allen was... work for the state.
Was she very active in the choir? Is that why the choir was named after
mm-hmm.
her?
Yeah. But she was active in the... She was very active in the church. Mm-hmm. When they had circles, she was a circle leader. Mm-hmm. And just did everything. And she had... I don't want to say a lover, but she had a man that was very much in love with her
mm-hmm.
who, I think, when he died, he left her quite a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So she was kind of independently wealthy, wealth being a relative term, but she was a strong financial supporter of the church and also just an active leader on all fronts. She was the church recording secretary and kept the minutes of the meetings and was just really one of the pillars of the church.
And what do you remember about Charlotte Hilton Green?
Her husband was in the economics department at State, but she was an environmentalist before the term. And she wrote a column for the News and Observer about birds and the bees and the trees and everything. And I don't really remember her being so active in any special way in the church, but she brought all that interest to the church and influenced a lot of people. Come in.
Good evening, Mr. Gaines.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Hi there.
Hey, I was checking to see what you're going to have for dinner.
Let's see. You got the my menu's right under that lamp.
Okay, I can tell you what they're having.
Okay.
They have crab cakes with coleslaw. They have roasted dark chicken, baked sweet potato with asparagus. The crab cakes are dark chicken.
I think I'll have the dark chicken.
Okay, with the sweet potato and asparagus.
Uh huh.
Okay.
And do I get a salad with that? Or can I have a salad?
Yes, sir. I can request one.
Okay. I think I'd like that.
Okay.
And that ought to do it.
All right. Well, I'll bring it up about 6:15.
That'll be great.
All right.
If they have any banana pudding, I'd like some of that.
They have blackberry cobbler.
How about bringing me some of that?
Okay. I saw that on the board. So blackberry cobbler. I put in an order for that as well.
That'll be... not as good as banana pudding, but the next best thing.
Yes, sir. Well, I'll bring it up to you about 6:15, 6:30.
Wonderful.
All right, Mr. Kane.
I'll be looking for you.
Yes, sir. Have a good evening.
You too.
I'm kind of envious of living at a place where somebody comes up and knocks on your door and says, what would you like to have for dinner? Nobody does that at my house.
It is wonderful. I'm on this plan that I get two meals a day, breakfast and either lunch or dinner. And, they have a menu every day, a little different, something different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty good food.
Let's come back to Stuart Nam
Okay.
little bit. Now, is he somebody you knew on campus, or did you meet him through the church?
I knew him on campus before he came to the church.
Before he came to the church.
Yeah. He came after we did to the church. He... he was very active in the Institute, was chairman of the Institute several years. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he wrote the history that you read.
Right, that was 1967, if I remember correctly.
And he was a very quiet person. He was a leader in the church, but not in the sense that Dick King was. He was more of a quiet presence. And Evelyn the same way. And it's just too bad that he didn't live long enough to do more history. He had intended to, but it's just, he died quite young, as I recall.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. And she continued to work in the library, and she was very much a loner. She was sad. I never really felt close to her, but when Stuart died, she had the doctor call me. I was, as close as anybody she had to call, and helped her plan the service and pick out the casket and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just surprised because I was close to them, but not that intimate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they would, and she didn't have any relatives here.
Right.
So anyhow.
Do you remember very much about the dialogue that took place at the United Church regarding the move to shut down the church there and move out to Dixie Trail and Wade Avenue? Was that a?
It was a big issue.
It was a big issue.
It was.
I mean, there must have been a lot of affection for that old church.
Yes, It was a beautiful building. It was in terrible repair. And we had absolutely no parking, which was not a problem on Sunday because you could, the state buildings were around and you could park in the lots and stuff. But it was a problem. For any kind of activity you had during the day, parking was a real problem. And I know it would have taken quite a lot of money to do what needed to be done in fixing up, modernizing the church. Like, it was still a shovel coal into the furnace, you know, and Ralph Cope used to go down here early on Sunday morning and start the furnace. And, and of course, the ENR church was a newer church, and it was a very nice looking church sitting up there on the hill. And they didn't have many members.
They were in quite significant decline.
Yes, they were.
And had a building debt, as I recall.
I guess they did, yeah, I think so. And we took that on, of course. And it wasn't long before I think all of their members left. Bryce Yontz, you might have known him. He was the alumni secretary. He was very active in that church. And they stayed for a while, but then they moved and went to, I think, Island Methodist.
Right.
And that was a loss because he was a mover and shaker. And I don't know. I don't think we were there. I don't know why that happened, but it was too bad because...
Do you think virtually all the members from downtown made the transition, or did you lose some people?
I think most of them came, even though they had been very opposed to moving. Like, even Isabella Cannon was very opposed to moving. And it was a wrench because that church was a... It was such a nice building.
Sure.
And it had a lot of history attached to it down there with, you know, that's where the Institute was and all the other things that the church did. It happened during Collins' tenure. He was very much in favor of moving.
Mm-hmm. But then he left almost immediately after the meeting, didn't he? That's when John Lackey came in.
And somebody said, he moved us and then he left us. was John Lackey right after?
I think John Lackey came, I can't think of anyone who was in between them. And uh-huh. I came in the fall of 69, and John Lackey's the first pastor that I knew.
Uh-huh. I've always felt badly about that. John Lackey and I just did not get along very well.
Is that right?
And in fact, I stopped going to church.
And, well, there was a move. There was a move to get rid of him.
Yeah, I wasn't part of that.
I was not in the church when that happened, but it happened. It happened in about 1973, as I recall, something like that.
Uh-huh. I can't.
And
remember.
I don't know how badly that divided the church.
But I should have been more supportive of him because I agreed with him on almost everything.
And he had very much a social action slant.
Yes, he did.
So tell me more about your issues with John.
Well, it was just a personality thing,
really?
I think. He could say good morning and I wouldn't like it. I could say good morning and he wouldn't like it. It's just that
I think some people in the church experienced him as being sort of aloof.
I don't know what
it was. He just didn't sit well with you.
And as I look back on it, you know, he all the things that I think the church ought to be about, he was about.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it wasn't his issues.
No, it was not issues. It was just we just didn't get along.
Right.
And I felt badly about that. And you know, when he's been back to preach twice. The first was when Callie was here, and we had that month of Sundays and had all the old preachers come back. I thought he preached the best sermon of any of the ones that came back. And I thought, gosh, why didn't I support this guy? But anyhow, that was just a problem. Carolyn continued to be very active in the church, and I was active, but I mean, I just didn't get along with John. And there were other people, people like Henry Bowers, I think, left the church when
during John Mackey's time.
And Stanley and Elizabeth Suval. Did you know them? He was in history. She's out at Springmore now. And some other people just didn't like him and left the church. But he also had some very strong supporters. Guy Owen was one of his strong supporters.
Strong support.
And there were others that...
Was there always a strong connection between our church and the Quakers? I mean, there were people like, I know, like Lloyd Tyler, for example.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
Lloyd Tyler always was in the Quakers and also would show up often.
They were all part of the church until, and they tried to do this. They would have a Quaker meeting at our church, not while our service was going on, but either earlier or later. Mm-hmm. They had it at the church. And then when they decided that they had enough people to start their own meeting, and they didn't build immediately. They met at the Doak's house down in Cameron Park for a while until they built the church. But a lot of those folks, like the Tylers, and
now the Doak you're talking about, is that Peanut or Peanut's father?
Peanut and of course the whole family, mm-hmm. Chick and Irene were part of the church.
Right.
And the father, I guess, had died.
Had died by then.
And Miss Doak too. But and the Copes were Quakers, and they made that continued their close connection with both groups. I thought the Quakers added a lot to the church, because they were all peaceniks, of course, and the Unitarians too. It's interesting, the Unitarians, of course, have just blossomed. They got a big church and big congregation. The Quakers are still very small.